thank you so much for that awesome intro, and thank you to Felicity House for having us here. As mentioned, Alex, Justin, Christina, Amy, and Hope. And who better to moderate a Women in Comics panel than two dudes?
Couple of dudes.
So
imported some dudes in here. Great.
Yes, but we do, as mentioned, we do host the regular Comic Book Club show, which is every Tuesday night in New York. It's also a podcast on Nerdist, and we're really excited to talk to these folks here. We were chatting about this a little bit before the show, but we have kind of an amazing cross-section of the comic book industry. Normally, you think of it as just writers and artists on their own, but it's so much more than that. So I'm very pleased to see that we're going to be able to talk to them about the span of it today. But I know some people here, there may be some comic book fans in the audience, but there may be some non-comic book fans in the audience or new comic book, potential comic book fans as well. Nice. So just to start off, how did you guys get started off in comics? And Christina, maybe we can kick it off with you.
It was Batman. It's always Batman. I remember going to a store with my dad, and he was off and about, and I ended up getting lost in the bookstore and tripped into these comics, and the next hour of my life was Batman.
That's like a literal origin story.
You stumbled, were
bitten by a radioactive Batman comic, and now you're a comic fan.
Yep.
But at what point did you know that you wanted to be involved professionally?
It was about 12 years ago when I started going to comic book conventions seriously and had an issue finding stuff I was really interested in and talking with other female fans and their complaints about spaces within the comic con industry. And that's when I decided to go fix it, I guess.
Oh, cool. Well, we definitely want to come back and talk more about comic cons because I think that's an aspect of the industry, just the business behind it that doesn't get talked about a lot. But Amy, for you, we've had you on our live show before, and we love your work. You've done a ton of stuff from Red Sonja to Kiss to you have a YA novel that just came out. Is that right?
Coming out.
Yeah, I think they take a second to turn on.
Can you hear me? Is it working? Okay.
Yeah.
It's coming out soon. I think in like 2 months.
Yeah. So how did you get started? How did you first, what's your origin story?
My origin story is totally different. I got into it purely by accident. I was trying to help my friend get into comics. And and somehow I just got sucked into the maelstrom. And of course, she's no longer in comics, but you know, now I am. So, it was literally because I have a little bit of a publishing background, a startup background, and she was writing for TV and film at the time. So she wanted to translate her comics her scripts into comics. And I thought, well, it's not rocket science. I should be able to do that. It's just business, right? And then I just started getting into it. Next thing you know, I'm lettering and I'm learning to color and I'm learning to write. And then all of a sudden, I'm producing the book. And then she left to, you know, direct a film. So.
Hope, let's talk to you. You are, somebody referred to you before the show as an archivist, right? Mm-hmm. That you know the span and have tackled the span of the history of comics. So how did you begin?
Yeah, so for me getting into comics, I was really into working in the film and TV industry, but I was always obsessed with comics as just my personal passion. And so I decided to merge the two, and I helped produce a documentary on the history of Canadian superheroes, because that was something that I had just been researching in my spare time for fun. And when that happened, I learned where all the comics were, and I decided, hey, why don't I try to publish a collection? And then from that, it went to another collection of old Canadian comics, and then from that, it went to news stories about women's love lives in the geek industry, and it's just kind of keeps going from there. And then, in a few days, I have a book coming out that's the history of female characters in comics from the 1930s to today.
Well, let's talk about that. Going all the way back to the 1930s, I think a lot of people feel like comics have always been a male-dominated industry. In a certain way, they have. But you can probably speak to this much more. The secret origin of comics is that it really is based in women's work, right?
I mean, women have been in comics in every single facet, be they fans or readers or creators or characters from the very beginning. I mean, we had Torchy Brown, which was a character in the 1930s, which was a black character written by a black woman, which was something that a lot of people might not realize. There was gay female artists working in the 1930s and 1940s openly. There's a lot of things that people forget because we really want to feel like everything is much, much better now. And so everything in the past must have been much, much worse.
Right.
But everything goes in dips and waves. And I do think things are a lot better now in some ways, but in some ways they're worse. Like, we definitely have only recently been starting to get back up to the volume of female readership that just naturally happened in the 1940s. But we've been doing so much better in terms of diversity than we were doing there.
Why do you think, why did it start to fall off?
Comic book shops, for sure. Yeah, that was the big thing. When comics went from the newsstands and then started getting into hobby shops and became more specialized in comic book shops, it became more isolated. It became more uncomfortable to go to. And at that point, sales started to drop off for female genres. So things like fashion comics, romance comics, teen comics, things like that, the sales dropped off. And then there was less stuff being produced specifically for women. And there was still female fans, but definitely in a lot less numbers in the 80s and the 90s.
So then why now has it come back?
The internet. The internet's amazing. Isn't the internet the best? A lot of people ask, like, what to recommend to read or have people read if they've never read a comic before. I always recommend webcomics because you can just go online. You can read as many as you want. You can try different types of comic book stories, funny ones, sad ones, romance, or, you know, just action adventure ones, and you can try whatever you want free of charge, and it's great. And it's just really enthusiastic people drawing and writing their own comics and putting them out there. And the webcomics industry, to me, just totally changed the way comics was for the better.
But on the other end, there are people who are trying to change the shops as well. Amy, I feel like we talked about this the last time you were on the show, and maybe I'm imagining that, but there's an organization called Valkyries. I don't know. Yeah, can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, I think there's, and I'm not sure what's behind this, but now there is an organization of women, female retailers, so they call themselves the Valkyries, and they're great inspiration and a great help to all the creators. So, you know, I think that they've been very good at advocating for creator-owned women's books and also just helping get more women into the stores. And I think that's, I don't know if it's quantifiable, but I think they've been, I do feel that they've changed the dynamics of walking to stores and making it feel more comfortable.
On a similar note, you've been with New York Comic Con since the beginning. I mean, first of all, people probably know the name San Diego Comic Con, and at least here in New York, people know New York Comic Con as well. And I think technically New York Comic Con is bigger than San Diego Comic Con, right?
Technically, yes.
Technically, yeah. Yes. But one thing we were talking about before we came out here, we were at the first Comic Con wandering around, and even back then, I was struck by how even the gender diversity was. And you had some raw numbers to back that up, right?
Yeah. Over the last 10 years, we've seen the diversity go from 60-40, where 60% were male, 40% were female. And now today, it's at New York Comic Con, and even 50-50. At our Seattle show, Emerald City Comic Con, it's actually, the new number is 52% women that are going to the show versus 48% men. Chicago is a little bit closer to 50-50, but it's really great to see that space widen up. And I think the number is actually skewing a little bit. I would say more women than men are going to New York just based on what I'm seeing at the show floor, what I'm seeing in panels, and who's interacting with us more via email and on Twitter and on Facebook. And the fans that are really vibrant and really hungry tend to be the women.
And what side of the industry do you think is sort of bringing those numbers in? Is it just across the board, or is it specific to?
You know, I think it's TV fandoms. I think it's movie fandoms, and then they're all driving right into the comics because they see something, they watch a show on TV or they see a great movie and they want to know, learn the source. And so they're going to DC or Marvel or Image and finding those comics and branching out from there. And also webcomics is a huge one. Fans that are casual fans, they're all reading webcomics, which is super interesting.
One of the things, for those of you who have been at cons, you know, they're big marketplaces. Like, people are actually physically selling stuff. And when you have a gender split like that, that changes how people buy things and then how they sell things. So how does it affect that? What trends have you seen?
What I've seen is retailers be a lot more focused on being inclusive with their demographics. Before, they would ask, you know, what are your demographics? What is the breakdown? What is our gender breakdown? What is our age breakdown? And now it's a lot less that. And it's a lot more, what are your fans looking for? And so it's really nice to see them drop gender because they're realizing, you know, this actually doesn't play into what we're going to bring. It's really, what are they interested in? And that's really nice to see.
Yeah. Amy and Hope, you're actually heading up to a Comic-Con tomorrow, right? So what trends have you seen from your perspective, either from tables or panels or anything like that? How have things changed in terms of gender diversity?
I've always had as much women as men and vice versa with my comics, I think. I haven't noticed any significant push one way or the other.
Yeah, I feel like I get about 50-50, male, female. And even though when I should go all the way back when I started the company with my friend to start doing comics, we really thought that there was a vacuum for comics for young women. And that's why we started making these comics. But then I think that vacuum quickly started filling in once people realized this is where the growth is. This is where the opportunity is for the comics market. So now you're seeing Marvel and all the, you know, everyone's sort of trying to figure out this space. But I think, fortunately, I'm actually writing these comics now, and I'm actually, but really, I'll use anecdotal evidence. I was just at C2E2 in Chicago, and I would say about 50-50, male and female coming up to me, telling me how much they liked my Poison Ivy, Red Sonja, etc. But I would say a good half dozen women came up to me and said this was their first comic ever, and they were so excited, and now they're reading comics, like a lot of comics. You know, one woman brought over the CGC guy. She had it CGC'd. Even the CGC guy was really excited. I mean, and that's like possibly the most jaded person in the industry, yeah. Right?
Oh, sorry. So if you wanted to get into comics, I mean, maybe Amy, this is for you, but I'm curious to hear, you guys, I'm sure, have heard stories as well. There's no one way in, but if somebody in this audience was interested in that, what are the best tips you have?
Don't do it.
This is an easy question.
No, that's terrible. No, do it. Because if you're passionate about it, and this is the thing for me when I say it was accidental, I didn't realize I had a passion for comics. But this is part of, I think, growing up as a woman, is that, you know, it was never presented to me like, hey, have you ever considered being in comics? It was never an option that was, you know, a viable career. So it just sort of happened, and it turns out that I guess I'm good at it, and I love doing it, and I'm passionate about it, but that's purely by accident. I could have easily spent the rest of my life not doing it. So I think if you're passionate about it now, absolutely look and do it. I tell everybody when I, at conventions, and I do a lot of panels where I talk about making comics, that if you want to make a comic, you can make a comic. Just do it. And then you'll find out, you know, if you're passionate about it, because it's a lot of work. But once you start and you feel like you can't stop, then you know you're hooked. And try to save up money before you do that. That's what I would say. Just do it.
When I mean, you guys have been passionate fans of comics, but you're primarily in the publishing and on the event side. So there's a lot of other opportunity besides like having to like only write and just hope for the, something to work out. How would someone get into these other sides of the industry?
So for publishing, I guess the big thing is just to make a lot of friends with a lot of different artists and writers and listen to them about what they want to publish and make and help them along. Like I have no desire to write or draw, but I love helping other people. I mean, I know I wrote a history book, but that's different. It's just describing what comics I like. But yeah, just make friends with people and listen to them and talk to them. And that's the biggest thing about whether you're working in any sphere of comics, whether you're a creator or in publishing or in other spaces, is just building the networks and connections with people who are at your stages. And you can all help each other grow.
Christina, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that completely. It's a lot of making friends and networking. Also, volunteer for your local show. See if you like it. Some of our best employees have been volunteers for years and years, and they realize, you know, this is actually what I want to do with my life. And then they go
throwing
in
the party.
Yeah, they are throwing the party, and it is fun.
You were talking about this again a little bit before the show, but you guys have actually pushed panels to be more diverse.
Yes.
At Comic-Con. Could you talk about that a little bit?
It's one of the most sometimes uncomfortable things that we do is because we don't create most of our own content. People submit their content to us. And so in our panel review, it's like, oh, this is such a wonderful concept. And then we look at the panelist list and it's not very diverse or not diverse at all. And so it's creating that conversation with the person that submitted it, who's often the moderator, and saying, you know, we think this is a great concept. We would really like you to add some people of color and some women and some more diversity to really speak to this topic. And that's been one of the most successful things that we've done, aside from just increasing the amount of paneling we're doing regarding topics on diversity, is just making our general top panels diverse. It's so valuable for all of the fans, and the amount of feedback we get for that is really great.
This might be getting a little too inside baseball, but I'm curious to get your guys' take on this. So for at least the past couple of years, I feel like there has been a debate about whether there should be women in comics panels at all, which is a weird thing to be doing at a women in comics panel, to be talking mm-hmm. about that. But where do you guys fall on that? Are we past that point? Is it still necessary? How do you feel? Hope it looks like...
Oh, yeah, no, I was just talking about this the other day. So it is something I think about a lot. And I think it is important to still have women in comics panels, but you have to make sure women are on the other panels too. And that's the biggest thing I feel, is that some conventions I've been to say, oh, well, we have our one women comics panel and that's it. Like, that's our thing. And then all the other panels are all male. And it's like, well, no, that's just making us be limited to just specifically talking about our gender. And while there are gender specific issues in terms of representation that, you know, do bear talking about, none of us, you know, all of us have interests outside of just our, the way we identify our gender as. And it's important stuff to talk about. Like, I love talking about Canadian comics. After I started doing feminist work, though, I never got asked to do any more Canadian history panels ever. I only get asked to do feminism panels now, and it does feel a bit limiting sometimes.
If you would like to just briefly go through the history of Canada right now, you can.
As a country, and then the
start at the beginning, and then work to today.
And Justin Trudeau as much as possible,
much as you can,
because he seems amazing.
He seems like a great guy,
especially compared to other world leaders from other nations.
Sure,
whoever we could be talking about, anybody. Yeah. Great.
We were talking about the women in comics panels.
Yes, women.
So. Amy, you...
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that I have seen a big shift in, and thanks to people like Christina Rogers here, because I think when I first started doing panels, I think it was 2012, and I was in a panel in Detroit, and I think I was the only woman on the panel. And this woman came up to me afterwards, and she started crying because she was so happy to see a woman on a panel. It's that bad, you know? It's like, wow. So after that, I started being a lot more aggressive in putting in panel requests, because part of it is us. We need to say we want to do the panel, and we want to do a panel that's not just about women in comics. So I started aggressively doing that for all the shows. And just to make a point, I started basically stacking that panel full of women, and then I would add a token guy. and people thought it was really funny because it's very obvious. Then it's like, okay, we're talking about not just women in comics. We're talking about comics in general. And I think people started getting that. And it was kind of a good feeling that... you know, it doesn't have to be. I think there's still a place for women in comics because we're not past that. We're not at parity. So I think it's still worth talking about, but we don't want to be limited. You know, I'd like to talk about other things, you know?
Do you feel it shifting away? Like, how often do you have people being like, so Wit, what women characters are you writing? Or like, I mean, you're doing a comic about Kiss. Like, that's not what many people would be like. That female-focused band Kiss.
Yeah, there's a reason why I asked for Kiss, because people don't expect that. And I think when we're past that, where I feel like I can write anything, that will be the time where I feel like we don't have to do women in comics panels, right? But I just did a panel in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, and the moderator started talking about to all us women on the panel. And he was like, well, so do you feel as a woman you have a special affinity for these characters and you write women characters better? He started off that way. And then it was just, you could see Bobby Chase is an editor at DC, and she was just going green. She was so livid. But, you know, I think there's still a lot of work to be done.
Christina, what about you? I think you touched on this a little bit before, but when you guys are going through panels, do you ever get to that women in, how many women in comics panel submissions do you get at this point?
a lot. Yeah. We get quite a lot. So we try to really focus on the ones that are different and the ones that are new. We really enjoy seeing panel submissions about women in comics that hasn't been done in the last 2 years at New York. Or we call it continuing the conversation. So if somebody, person A, presents it in 2016, they'll present the, kind of the same thing the next year, but it'll be a continuing of that panel, which we really like because it's pushing that conversation forward. But there's no hard and fast number. It's how many of them are unique and interesting and presenting good viewpoints. So it's as many as we end up liking.
Amy, your story about the fan coming up to you, I feel like I've heard variations on that story so many different times, and particularly over the past year, not just with women in comics, but as comics have tended to diversify their characters, people saying, oh my gosh, I see myself for the first time. I'm curious to hear from you guys. I mean, Amy, I don't know if you have another story, but Christina and Hope, if you have seen or observed or heard any stories like these.
I work a lot with Indigenous comic creators, so Native American comic creators in Winnipeg, where I'm from. And it's been a huge shift, especially when I did a LGBT Indigenous sci-fi book. People were like, wait, the stories are happy? there's Native people in the future, there's Native people who are gay in the future, and they're in love, and everything's good. I'm like, yeah, that's the concept of the book. And they're like, we've never seen this. Like, it isn't out there. And so being able to like provide that to some people was something that was really important to me because, I mean, those are my friends, right? Those are people I see and hang out with every day, and seeing that they're not getting the stories they want to tell out there, if I can help that in any way, that's something that's kind of good and important, I think, to me. And it's been great to see the reception for those.
Christina, how about you?
We get fantastic emails after the show. From fans being really happy to see themselves on a panel and reflected in comics. And I think one of my favorites was somebody just saying, you know, I've spent the last year being so frustrated about the political climate, but I was able to go to the show. And for the first time, I felt surrounded by my people. And I was really encouraged because there is a aspect of my life that I love so much that is still reflecting back to me what I want to see of the world. And that was sent around to all of the Read Pop teams, just a hey, good job guys, because
you get what requests are you getting now that haven't really been done yet, or that you're like sort of like, this is the one the people want, but no one's submitting that panelize?
You know,
we'll submit it.
Yeah, we're looking to do it.
We're trying to find out what we should submit as a
farming for information.
We're just farming a little bit.
You know, we do have a large underrepresentation of the LGBTQ community. We have some excellent panels submitted, but it tends to cover one sphere, and then we don't have the rest of the sphere yet. Like, there's no continuing conversation or deep dive into motivations of characters or why we write these characters and why they're important. So I think that's our largest gap right now.
Amy and Hope, same sort of question for you. Where do you think the largest growth area in comics is right now? Where does it need to go? Who needs to be represented more?
The representation question, I think it's in so many different ways. It's not just the characters, but also the kinds of stories. So I think there's a lot of growth. I mean, just in terms of even genre, we've been so dominated by superhero that the web comics and indie comics have filled in a lot. But if we're talking about the actual market, is still like in terms of monthly comics, is still very much dominated by Marvel and DC. I mean, Image has become a huge player in that. But I think there's a lot of room because, again, the diversity of even just the type of story. Like I did a story for Vertigo. One of my first story I did for Vertigo was a story set in Detroit in the future, and it was a happy Detroit. And you know, usually it's the stereotype that Detroit is a slum, right? And so I went to Motor City Con, and I had somebody run up to me and said, "Thank you for representing Detroit in a realistic manner," because Detroit there's a lot of growth in Detroit right now. But it's, you know, we don't want to hear that. We want to see this these horrible stories in the news, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's just a lot of things. But that particular story, when I pitched it, I actually changed, and after it got approved, I changed the protagonist to a middle-aged African-American female, because again, we don't get that. We very rarely get that kind of protagonist. So, and I think that really made, I felt very happy with it.
Move to you.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, I think there definitely is a huge lack of Indigenous representation. Definitely, a lot of people want to write Native characters, but not talk to or hire Native creators to be involved. So for me, that's a big issue, because it creates a big stereotype. But especially, I mean, probably relevant to a lot of the audience members, that there isn't that much representation of people on the spectrum in the pages of comics, and that's unfortunate, because you can make characters be whoever you want to be, so why not make them interesting people, and why not showcase the people you know in your life?
This is actually a question from a member who sent it in earlier, but they were wondering, who inspires you? Who is somebody that you look up to? And it could be somebody either in the comic book industry, or me and Justin, or whoever. It doesn't really matter. It
could be anybody in the room,
honestly,
or
Justin Trudeau, or
Justin Trudeau specifically.
Who inspires ideas, or who inspires me in terms of just creatively?
I think it's probably the latter, but the former is actually kind of interesting too. So yeah. Whatever you would like to answer.
Well, I get two forms of inspiration. One is like everyday inspiration from just people I meet. I literally put people I meet every day into the comic and their stories, or people I see in the subway or on the street. But the inspiration in terms of just continuing working in comics, because it is hard, it's a slog, there's just so many good comics coming out now. I mean, if you go into a comic book store and just see all the stuff that's out, it's almost impossible to buy everything. There's just so many good writers. I don't want to name names, but there's a bunch of writers that I just follow and I try to emulate, and to me that they're really the inspiration for just improving my craft.
Hope, Christina, what about you?
In terms of history writing, I guess Trina Robbins is my biggest inspiration. She's been doing comic book research and writing comics and drawing comics since the 1970s. And she's been the first one to unearth all these figures about comic book fans, about female creators in the 1940s and the 1950s and on, that people were blown away because they'd just been buried, they'd just been forgotten. So in terms of history research, she's probably my biggest inspiration. In terms of small press publishing, I think Spike Trotman is, it's hard to say inspiration, because I feel like we're both working in the same field, but definitely, I mean, seeing all the things that she does makes me not lose hope in small publishing and small press publishing as a career. And I think it would be very easy, if you didn't have any guideposts to look at, to just kind of give up and not push yourself as hard as you can push yourself.
Christina, what about you?
I draw a lot of inspiration from contemporaries in the field. Whenever I feel a little down on comics, there's always somebody I can talk with that I'm working with in some way that will just say one thing that reminds me why we're doing what we're doing and why comics is so great and how much there is out there and how much there is still to do. And then I draw a lot of inspiration from our fans, you know, people that go to our shows and really love the same things that we love. I find it really encouraging to give people kind of a home away from home for a weekend.
On that note, who are some up-and-coming artists or writers or just people generally in the comic book industry that people should keep their eye on or search out?
I'm a big fan of Giselle Lagasse. She's a Canadian cartoonist, and she's a friend of mine as well. And she's built this huge webcomic empire since the beginning of the 2000s. And a lot of people don't know about her because she works primarily in webcomics. But lately, she's been doing work with Dynamite. She's been doing work with IDW. She's been doing some work for Marvel, covers and interiors and stuff. And she's starting to blow up. But your country didn't let her in for the convention.
Oh, man. Sorry. Who can we blame for that?
Yeah.
Really,
is there anybody? Was it Justin Trudeau the other guy? The other guy.
It's the border. It's always a mess. But, yeah, she's someone that is really one to watch out for, not because she's not already successful, which she is, but I can't wait to see what she's going to be doing in print comics in the next few years.
Late Bond. and Black Crown, her new imprint. I am, when she announced that at Emerald City, I was very, very interested to see what she's going to do next. I think the world of her, and I can't wait.
Amy, anybody?
Are you dreading this question?
No, I am dreading it because I have a whole list of people. It also depends, and Sean Von Gorman, who I collaborate with.
Wow. Throat clear over there.
Sean did a variant cover on the Kiss series, and we're working on another indie title about a homeless man who thinks he's a superhero. I mean, and these are the things that we can do because we're not beholden to it's something that Marvel or DC would never do, but we can do it on our own, do the miracle of technology and web comics and everything, and hopefully we don't get sued. There's a whole, like, Joel Mulvey, I really love what he's doing lately. He's another artist. Ariel Christentina, she's on Insects. She's been working for a couple of years. There's a bunch of people I want to say are up and coming, but in reality, they've been working at this over a decade.
You're sort of always up and coming, but also always succeeding in comics.
So it's kind of like, I'm a huge fan of Terry Moore, but he's been in the business a long time.
Yeah.
Right? I can't say he's up and coming. He's just brilliant. When you're talking about inspiration, he's my inspiration. He's a writer and artist, and he just does these brilliant stories, Rachel Rising, Strangers in Paradise, Motor Girl, impeccable storytelling. You have to pick it up. But he's not considered mainstream. He tried to do a little Marvel, did not work for him because his style is very much different. He does everything himself. He even letters himself. And to me, that's just amazing. So, you know, every year there's always someone coming. Bilquis Everly is a new artist coming out of Brazil. She's brilliant. She's so good, all the older artists are scared. You know, she only just started working a couple of years ago, maybe, yeah.
Talking about Marvel and DC, or the big publishers, what's a piece of advice? I feel like they're always struggling to figure out diversity or just new stories, new voices. What's a piece of advice you could give them on how to, like, make a move?
For creators or for...
Creators or, like, the publisher as a whole, like, bring in these new voices.
DC's been doing the talent search.
Yeah.
But I think what's important for people to realize, if they want to make a living off mainstream comics, is... you know, it's kind of like the major leagues and the minor leagues. You really kind of have to work your way up, especially for artists, because the level of art that's required, it's not just the art, it's the speed at which you have speed and consistency which you have to produce every month, and that's really hard for 95% of people to do, and there's very few people who can do it. So there is a problem in terms of the talent that's going into, you know, they're well aware they have a diversity problem, but part of it is the pool of people that you have to actually realize you want to do it and then commit to it. So they're trying to make inroads to, if it's something that you're interested in, you do actually have to push it and not, it was very easy when I was breaking in as a woman writer and as a woman of color to just say, you know what, this is not for me, because there are so many barriers in place. You know, again, it's like, why would I write Deadpool? Why would I write Kiss? You know, why don't I just go for Angry Birds or you know, My Little Pony? There's definitely a tracking, you know. Whether it's conscious or not, that is the way the industry works. Nobody's like, hey, you know what, you should be thinking about writing Batman. And I think that is something we all have to overcome and say, you know what, I want to write what I want to write. And fortunately, we have, like, now Becky Cloonan is writing Punisher. And nobody's like, oh my God, a chick writing Punisher? It's Becky Cloonan. She's writing Punisher. Nobody's saying anything. So I think we made inroads, but, you know, we have to look at those examples and say, I can do that too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different thing, but I've seen a ton of people discussing online recently that they've done basically no marketing for the Wonder Woman movie, despite the fact that it's a big screen Wonder Woman movie and it's 3 months away. And one of my friends online posted a comparison of the Gal Gadot magazine covers versus the Henry Cavill magazine covers before Man of Steel came out. And it's one Gal Gadot cover and like 30 Henry Cavill covers. Why does this keep happening? explain it to us right here, right now. Just break it down.
He's listening.
I think it's a lack of strength and leadership, honestly. I think it's a lack of, they just need to get some of the more right people in to make those decisions and push initiatives forward and to not be afraid and say, you know, no, we are going to do this thing and it does have value and that's that. And I don't think they have enough people over there doing that.
And it feels like, especially with the numbers you've been telling us tonight, that the fan base is there, the readership is there,
yes,
along the strict number lines. But like, everybody reads comics about everything. Like, we don't need to just be like, oh no, like you're saying, like women write women's comics and Wonder Woman's only for women. And I think it does take a while to get to the leaders of
big companies. The pack, was that what you almost said?
Yeah, I was going to do leaders of the pack.
I knew what was going on. We have a couple more minutes to go. So just some quick unrelated questions I figured we could ask. Your desert island book, the book that if you were trapped on a desert island, you would take, and that's the one book you could read over and over and over again.
Ooh, I'd say the Love and Rockets collection, Locas. I always enjoy that one. I could just pore over it for so long. It's such a beautiful story of friends and community and soap opera drama. It's great. And it's gorgeously drawn too. So
Amy?
Panicking. I can't answer that. that's
well, you don't have to actually go to a desert island. You can just, you're not stuck with this answer.
Yeah. It's not going to trap you.
Desert island and I'm panicking.
There. Now you have nothing.
I guess the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because I feel like I could reread that a lot.
You're going with volume over.
Yeah.
Okay. Talking comics, or are we talking prose?
Well, we were talking comics, but
I can't choose.
Maybe
an essential collection.
Wonder Woman essential collection, all three volumes.
Yeah.
All right, that's good. That's cheating, but all right.
No, you said comics. No, you didn't say not essential.
That's true. I guess that's
the entirety of comic books. Yeah.
75th anniversary compendium.
Oh, okay. Smart.
All right, that works.
That's fair.
Best comic book based movie. I don't like any of them.
I don't think I've seen it yet.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
I don't think it's out yet. There's some really cool comic book movies, but I don't think there's like a best yet.
Yeah,
that I like
why?
More than
what,
I like the
what
comics.
Will bring it up to that level?
Maybe Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Some great TV shows, though.
I don't want to be disappointed.
Yeah. I've been so much more pleased with the TV universes and the movie universe, to be honest. Like, I've watched all the superhero movies, but reluctantly. Yeah. But like, I love Jessica Jones a lot. And like, I know it's silly, but I love Teen Titans Go so much.
It's
not silly.
So
great. I love it too.
Amy, do you have an answer or are you stumped? Teen Titans Go? Okay, best comic book.
I'm a big fan of The Walking Dead, so
Why do you think TV is better at that, at being good?
Because comics are serial. The thing about comics is that you read it and then you end on a cliffhanger and oh no, what happens next? And movies can't replicate that. Right. There's no way you can do that. You can only do that on TV.
Movies are really caught up in a lot of huge budgets and politics and people and financing. I think there's in comics it's so much simpler. If we want to change a character, we can do that. You know, we just have a discussion with the artist and boom, we've done it. Whereas I think when you get to the movies level, it just suddenly becomes, the possibility for failure is so great and the possibility for financial failure is so great, much more so than TV.
One of the most typical comic book questions is, if you had a superpower, what would it be? Instead, give each other superpowers, what would they be?
Oh no, that's too stressful. I can't do everyone, that.
The audience is panicking now. They're like, oh no.
Just give us a different question. Is that, could that be the superpower that we give to you? The power to give us a different question?
A different question.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Nice.
Right. Yeah, sure. What's your group superpower? Like you all punch fists in the middle and this
happens. Power to change the comics market.
Oh, wow.
That's a good.
Yeah, that's a good, useful power. Not a great comic, I'm just going to throw out there.
Very meta.
Power to walk into D.C. and say, you guys are screwing up and all this stuff, and we will take over, and we will do it right for you.
We will fix this for you.
Well, I mean, since you brought it up, I will throw out there, this is, again, like a little in the industry for the non-comic book fans, but they just announced this new line for DC Comics where they're creating new characters, which is awesome and very necessary.
Like Young Animal, or?
What? Dark Matter, yeah. So, it's a new superhero line with new superheroes called Dark Matter, but people immediately pointed out that every single creator on there, even though they're very talented, are all men. So when you see something like that, what is your reaction?
They're dumb.
Yeah.
You can't just look at the list and be like, oh, hey, there seems to be something off about this. Yeah. But also, like, how do you not know any... I did a book recently called A Minyan Yidden, which is like a collection of Jewish stories, and Trina did the writing in that, and then we put together a list of artists, and maybe it's just because of who we are, but, you know, 70% of the artists we had named were women. Like, it's not hard. We weren't even trying to. There's so many great women creators out there. How do you purposefully make a list of all those people to have them all be men? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but if you do have these major companies, and at least DC in this case, clearly putting these blinders on and not realizing this is an issue, how do you fix the problem? How do we fix the problem? How can the people in the audience help fix this problem?
They could hire me as a consultant because I do have an MBA from Harvard, but I don't think they really care about that. And it's amazing. I get mansplained all the time about the industry. And I'm like, okay, you know, I used to work in the business where I come into your company and I fire everybody who's making these poor business decisions and put in the new strategic plan. But I'm not in that business anymore. I write comics. So I just keep my mouth shut, except here. So now I'm never going to write another DC comic again. I mean, I'm on the creative side. I really don't want to be on the business side. But the growth in this industry is in diversity, is in women voices, is in women's readers. It's not in 40-year-old guys who've been reading the same comics over and over again, who are still in the shops complaining about those comics. Yes. But so why are you in the store? You know, it's like, and this is, you want to cater to those readers, or do you want to branch out and get newer readers in? And that's what they should be focusing on. And Marvel's trying to do that. Marvel, it definitely is trying to do that. I don't know what's going on with DC. Again, I'm getting myself into huge trouble here. In their defense, they don't think that they're doing anything wrong. They're trying. And the reality is the comics business, within, they're part of a larger corporation, and they have to justify their budgets. They have to justify their staff. And every title they put out has to... make money. And so if they feel there's a risk, right, they're going to go with the names that they know are going to sell. So they don't know necessarily if I'm going to sell, but they figure John Romita Jr. will sell. So hence you've got Dark Matter, right? So that's what happens. But the thing is with comics, it's so cheap to produce compared to anything else that they should be taking risks, because these are the things that get turned into movies. These are the things that get turned into TV. Why not? You know, take those risks, and that's what I think they should be doing.
And it does. It does feel like we've watched the Archie line. They have taken so many risks with their characters, and it's worked incredibly well. The show Riverdale's on now on TV, and it's no one could point to like Batman is just as iconic as Archie. Like you can, and they just made those huge changes. So it's out. It's possible. Do you feel like it's moving in the right direction? We just had hit on some negative stuff. Are there bright spots out there? Are we going in the right direction?
I think Scholastic and the book publishers market is the really biggest bright spots. Like, it's amazing to see, for lack of a better word, girl genres come back. So, like, you know, romance and fashion were thrown away back then, but now we have the tween market, and we have kids reading books, and we have things like Smile and all these comics coming out that are like geared at younger girls, and it's great, and they're super popular, and they sell well. There's numbers to back it up. Like, you look at those numbers and they're good because they don't rely on the comic book shop market. They rely on bookshops. They rely on library sales. They use all sorts of other distribution, and it works for them.
Direct market is really, really killing the business. I mean, the if you look at the aggregate, the comics world is so huge, but we're so focused on these numbers that are coming from the Diamond distribution system for these independent stores. You're really not seeing the full picture. You're not seeing, like, Rhina Telgemeier's numbers. You know, I mean, Batman, what is selling, like 100,000? If you look at Rhina Telgemeier's numbers, are, I don't, like 500,000? I mean, if you look at the entire universe, it is so much bigger, and I think we need to start looking at it that way and being more inclusive. Like, and I'm talking about, you know, the you know, comics press and things like that. I think that you know, it is a much more inclusive universe than we give it credit for.
Before we let you guys go and these fine folks get to ask you questions outside at the tables, what do you want to plug? What should people check out? I mean, New York Comic Con, I'm guessing, would be a nice thing to check out.
Yeah, New York Comic Con's really fun.
Nice.
Come check it out.
Well, anything else? I mean, any tips for attending New York Comic Con for folks that are maybe thinking for the first time?
If you are do want to attend New York Comic Con for the first time, we do require registration to purchase tickets. So it's filling out your fan verification profile so that you can take part in our pre-sale that's going to be later on in some date. But I do recommend you coming and going, coming to the show. And if you want to go to a smaller show, there are a ton of small cons in the area within an hour that are so fun, and you get to meet a lot of creators and meet a lot of new books, which I think is my most favorite thing about going to any show, is how many new books can I meet?
You need a starter con to get to the larger con.
I think it's always good to do a small con first.
Sort of a joke, but it's actually very... New York Comic Con can get insane
on those big
days. Yeah, it's very big. It's the biggest, technically.
Technically speaking.
So it's jam-packed. Going to a smaller con is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming, but I mean, there's so much. But I think I will be at Five Points Fest. That's coming up, and that's a smaller
that's
show,
so fun.
Right?
Yeah,
I think that's a good starter show, and there's some high quality talent that's going to be there. Some really great artists, and I think it's just much more of a manageable show if you were just kind of dipping your toe into that kind of experience, right? But then, you know, if you after that and you get hooked, absolutely go do the New York Comic Con. I just did Chicago Comic. C2E2, which is Reed, right?
That's us too.
Yeah, and I love Chicago. If you have the wherewithal, go to the Chicago show. Was my very first show, and it's kind of like a more manageable New York Comic Con.
It is, and I think it's some of the nicest fans in the country.
Yeah, it's great. The aisles are wider, right?
The aisles are a lot wider.
Not to get too granular about it, but that's something
right,
that we enjoy.
We're going to need another hour just to talk about the aisles in Chicago. Yeah. That's cool with you guys. Oh, my God. It's just
the flow.
Amy, you do want to plug your books, though?
Oh, so what am I plugging?
Your books?
Whatever you want.
You write comic books.
I write comic books. I think Kiss number 7 just came out, whole new arc. And it's really sci-fi. It's actually not as much about Kiss as it is about four kids in the future who are discovering the universe. And Red Sonja, I don't know, you know, it's swords and sorcery in the present, and she's just kind of badass. She's just, you know, going through New York, destroying New York, actually. What am I saying? She's saving New York, but, you know, in a really rough manner. And I have Anna and the Cosmic Race is a YA graphic novel. This is my first. I'm doing that with Kata Kane. And that's going to be out in the book market, I think, next month.
Cool. And Hope, what would you like to plug?
Oh, yeah. First, just like a comment about cons, is that if cons are overwhelming for you, which they can be, a lot of times your local comic book shops have nice, quieter meetup groups. I know in Winnipeg, where I'm from, I have a Geek Girl social night, which is just a nice area where women can come to various comic shops, browse around after hours, hang out together. And I'm sure there's something in the New York area, too. That would be good to go to.
Yeah. Cool. Midtown Comics, I think, has a couple of discussion groups every once in a while that you can check out, which are great. And particularly, like, the Times Square location can be very, very crowded.
Yeah.
So they have it at the downtown location, which is a little quieter and nicer. It's awesome.
Often empty.
and your books. Plug your books again.
Yeah. I have a book coming out next week called The Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen. It's a collection of female characters from the 1930s to the 2010s. And I also discuss different trends in the industry from that time period, too, and how fans have changed and how creators have changed, too.
All right, very cool. Awesome. Before we go, if any of you ever do want to come, as we said, we do have our live show every Tuesday night in New York at 8 p.m., and it's totally free, and we would love to see every single one of you there. Thank you to Felicity House for having us here. Let's give these women a big round of applause.
Round of applause.
All right. Yeah, and everybody, please,
go.
Let's go to the reception. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.